My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, and it's Dan Day. That's Anthony, did you know that, it's Dan Day on the Hoffman Show?
Now that you've said that, it makes sense. So, yes.
Yeah, Dan Orlovsky is going to join us coming up at 5 o'clock. But right now, it is our pleasure to welcome in Dan Pizzuta from the 33rd team. He's a writer. I've read a bunch of his stuff over the years at other places, including Sharp Football. He's now with the 33rd team. And the plan is, Dan, for you to join us all year long. So, welcome to your maiden voyage on the Hoffman Show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's just put it all out there. We'll get to some of the games, the primetime game tonight, tomorrow night, league-wide stuff in a second. But we got to get the fan base, the listenership, a base here of where you are on the home team. Because I think what's interesting, Dan, in covering this team is there's a lot of like rumblings within the league or certain insiders, certain writers that are really high on the Commanders, that they really like Jaden Daniels. They believe some of the hype that's coming out of Ashburn. Then there's others that are like, this team was 4-12 last year or 4-13, and they still stink. Where are you on the they still stink to believing the hype meter when it comes to the Washington Commanders entering 2024?
This might be a slightly boring answer, but it's somewhere in between, I think. I think there are a lot of things to like, and I do believe when you kind of look at what Jaden Daniels can bring to this offense, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we just kind of saw that in the first preseason game where we had that big throw. Some of my concerns are going to be what this offensive structure is and how well the Cliff Kingsbury offense fits with what Jaden Daniels does, because I think we also saw there were a lot of, you know, screens and RPOs. And if I kind of have some like PTSD of what Kingsbury was in Arizona, it was a lot of like horizontal throws that didn't necessarily take advantage of a quarterback's big arm. But I'm expecting a very good run game because I think Cliff can design that. I think that's going to help with Jaden Daniels and a lot of the things that they have on the ground in Washington now. The defense is going to be interesting because they brought in a lot of veterans. Whether that's going to be good, I'm not totally sure, but I also don't expect it to be a unit that is so based on miscommunication like it really was the past couple of years. So I think there's definitely a baseline there. So I think just kind of how this offense gels early in the season, I think, is going to really be what the ceiling of this Washington team can be for the 2024 season.
Dan, I don't know if you were trying to be funny there, but the line, this is a defense based off miscommunication, so perfectly describes the Ron Rivera-Jack Del Rio era that it almost moves me to tears. You mentioned the PTSD from Cliff in Arizona and a lot of the screens, and we've definitely seen a lot of that in camp. You never know what to believe in the preseason because everything's so vanilla, but it's certainly right. Something that we saw in training camp and I think will be a big part of this. Screens can be great. It's a way to get the quarter, you know, protect your quarterback, get the ball out of his hands. Obviously, there's some risk there. What is it about Cliff's screen game that you didn't necessarily like the deployment of or that you hope evolves into a better version in D.C. with Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's very static, and I think that's kind of one of the things about Cliff's offense in general, where he is going to use pace a lot, and I think we saw that in Arizona, where it was a lot of hurry up, but that also stops things from, you know, moving a lot before the snap. We see a lot of offenses now, like a Miami. They're all motion. That's how they use. That is their kind of secret weapon in the ways they are going to keep defenses off balance. And Cliff Kingsbury likes to use pace, so everything is going to go fast. But that does not leave a lot of time for players to be moving around before the snap between plays. So it's very static, and it keeps everyone in the same spots. And then when you just look at what the horizontal type of stretch is in that offense, it's not really, you know, pushing a lot of things into the intermediate area, which is one of the things where, you know, that was a concern of whether Jaden Daniels read the middle of the field in the intermediate area that well in college. And, you know, you really don't blame him because he never really needed to. When you can throw a slot fade to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. down the sidelines outside the numbers, you don't really need to be living in the middle of the field all that often. But this is also, it's not an offense that I think from what we've seen with Cliff, that it's going to be opening up that area, you know, schematically and in the structure of the offense. So I just think there are areas of the field that are very valuable that just don't get pushed as much in a Cliff Kingsbury offense, at least from what we've seen in Arizona. I don't know if this is something that, you know, he's been working on a little bit, but the USC offense last year when he was, you know, very involved in that passing game also kind of left Caleb Williams with a lot of things that, like, he needed to be out of structure because the structure of the offense wasn't all that great. So I'm not super optimistic, but there are things that I did like about it. But I just think we need to see a little more expansion of what some of those passing concepts are going to be in order for this passing game to really work well.
Dan Pizzuta of the 33rd team with us here on the Hoffman Show. One kind of lingering question that we're not going to have a distinctive answer to until November by definition is, can Cliff evolve? Because he is notoriously a hot starter, and then teams seem to figure it out, and his teams have failed down the stretch. Texas Tech, Arizona, on down the list. What is it that teams latch onto, and how do other really good offensive coordinators avoid that final, let's call it third or final quarter of the season rut that Kingsbury has routinely found himself in?
Yeah, I think it kind of ends up being something where When something doesn't work, I think he kind of falls back on the things that he does believe are going to be the staples. And kind of like I said, when you're using pace as the thing that you are using as your mismatch, if there's only a certain set of plays really that you're going to be able to run from that. So if you are running kind of the same things over and over and over, defenses then by the end of the year are going to be able to kind of get a sense of what those plays are going to be, how those plays are going to be targeted, and you kind of set the defense to stopping some of those, the concepts. So, and then the pace later in the year, if you don't really have those changeups, is going to be something that isn't as advantageous as you get later into the year. So the thing about Cliff is he does, like, come into the season with some very, like, cool things, and there usually are a couple of change-ups in those first few weeks of the season. But again, as, you know, whether it's an injury or something, because sometimes those did pop up in Arizona too, so they were kind of just working with what they could work with. And then the just expansion of the offense just wasn't as much as you would kind of like to see. So if they can kind of stay healthy, they see some things that maybe should be able to allow them to build on what this offense is going to be, then maybe there's, you know, some change and he can evolve within the season. But that's something like you said, we're not going to be able to know until October, November. And that's something I'm going to want to see a little bit before I believe in it.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team with us. One Commander's defensive question, or I guess it's quasi-Commander's. It certainly applies, but it's kind of leaning on your knowledge of league trends, Dan, is the volatility at the cornerback position, which the Commander's fans are hoping strikes the uptick this year in Washington after a brutal season last year for Benjamin St. Juice and Emmanuel Forbes. But when you look around the league and try to suss out the impact that coaching has both schematically and technique-wise, you know, clarity of assignment, all those kinds of things on the cornerback position. Would you agree with me if I said that position is more subject to coaching than anything else on defense? And then if you do agree with that, is that ultimately a good sign for the Commanders in 2024?
Yeah, I think you probably could say that, because I think it does depend a lot on, you know, how these cornerbacks are taught and, you know, what they're really expected to do in coverage, like you said. I mean, when you kind of go back to what, you know, Dan Quinn did with Dallas, I think he did encourage his corners to be very aggressive and kind of jump jump some routes. And I think we saw that, you know, when Trayvon Diggs had a lot of interceptions in his big year 2022. We saw that with Deron Bland last year. So I think that is certainly a coaching point when you see two players like that who are you know, very similar styles, which it did give up some very big plays when being that aggressive did not work on the other end of that. But I think there's going to be, you know, a hit and miss there. And when you have some of those big plays in the turnovers and you can create those, I do think that does help. So that is going to be one of the things that's really interesting with, I think, this cornerback room. Like, I did like Emmanuel Forbes a lot coming out in college. He was a physical corner that I think just kind of was a little hesitant in how he was going to play, how physical he could be. And I do think that the coaching style of what the secondary is going to be asked for should help a little bit. And that definitely is, you know, a position that just in general, because coverage is so reactive, like you can do a lot of things well and still give up a reception. That's why, especially when you look at like coverage stats and things, it's very hard to be good in coverage for a sustained period of time, even for some of the best cornerbacks in the league. So I do think coaching does play a part. And I do think some of the coaching in Washington should help that the guys that are currently on that Commanders team.
Well, certainly can't hurt based off last year. Certainly, that like there literally is no room to go down. Okay, tonight you got Ravens, Chiefs, NFL season opener. I think this is these teams are fascinating. The Chiefs arguably have more talent than they've had in the entire Mahomes era, and they're the two-time defending champions. Meanwhile, you got the Ravens bringing in Derrick Henry and, you know, the change up at the coordinator defensively as Mike McDonald goes to Seattle. So there's some pretty significant changes on not only with him, but down the staff. They lost a couple other guys as well. Anthony Weaver leaving for Miami. If you look at it from the Baltimore side, the addition of Henry does what for Lamar Jackson coming off of an MVP season? Obviously, it's hard to play a lot better, but how does the offense functionally change with that kind of back next to him?
Yeah, I think it really opened up a lot for both of those players involved. If you're sitting in, you know, shotgun or pistol, which I think, you know, Baltimore will use a little more of, it's going to be tempting to sit in a heavy box for this defense because you do want to stop the run. But if that's going to be the case, then you're going to have these one-on-ones on the outside that we know Lamar can take advantage of, or that's going to leave some room to scramble if he's kind of able to do that too. But if you're, you know, a little scared of, you know, what Jackson can do in the run and you're going to play a little off, you're going to use the light box, which I think we saw kind of the Ravens, because light boxes and things like that are really personnel set. If you're using 11 personnel with three wide receivers and you're spreading those guys out, it's going to be difficult for a defense to stack the box. So if the Ravens are going to be in that personnel, be a little wider, and then you have a light box for Derrick Henry, there's going to be a lot of room there for him to be running too. So I think it's just going to give them a little more balance, and they don't have to be too forced into one thing that they have to do, which I think they kind of have been in the past a little bit, especially when there wasn't really the wide receivers working quite as well as they had been. So I just think having those two players in the backfield together, and then when you start looking at the zone read and read options, like, I think it's kind of impossible for a defense to guess right when there's going to be either a handoff to Henry or a keeper from Lamar Jackson. There's really no right answer there for a defense. So I just think the dynamic they have in the run game is really going to help, and I think that's going to end up really opening up some of the things they can do in a passing game, off play action, in the middle of the field. And I really think that's just going to be a dynamic group that they have there.
Yeah, and of course, Mark Andrews, one of their best targets, occupying that space there in the middle. Same kind of concept in a different way on the other side. for years now, teams have been like, we are not giving up deep stuff to Mahomes. Last year, they started to clamp down a little bit more on Travis Kelce. It took the Chiefs a while, but they eventually figured it out. Dan, there are D coordinators making seven figures trying to figure out what the heck to do with the Chiefs. I figure we might as well just give our advice for free on the radio. If you are Baltimore tonight and everyone else in the AFC West and on the Chiefs schedule moving forward, like what is the thing? I know there was it Matabike or someone the other day that was like, oh, we just got to make him one dimensional. And it's like, yeah, good luck with that with Mahomes and the way Andy Reid's calling plays and designs an offense and as good as he is. But if there's one thing that you just absolutely cannot let happen against the Chiefs, what's that thing?
Oh, man, now, like you said, if I had one good answer for that, I think I'd be making a lot more money than I would be.
Hey, man, plans are easy. Executing's hard. Hey, if you just do this, you didn't do the thing that I said. That's the beauty of our jobs, is there's no actual consequences for our analysis.
Absolutely. So I think one of the things with Mahomes is you just cannot really let him settle into knowing what you're doing on defense. And I think we've seen with some of the better defenses that have been able to kind of slow him down, right? Because you don't stop Mahomes. You just really, like, it's the whole, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. It really is true. And I think the Ravens kind of did that in a little bit in the second half of the AFC Championship game last year. And it's a lot of just kind of changing the picture. They did a lot of those, you know, simulated pressures, which you're showing, you know, five or six guys on the line of scrimmage. You're showing a blitz, but only four come. But they're not necessarily the four that you believe would come, you know, in a more traditional pass rush. So you're changing up some of those looks. Cincinnati back a couple years ago when they were able to kind of slow Mahomes down a little bit, it was a lot of you were either blitzing or you were dropping eight, only rushing three. So I think it's a lot of changing up those looks and never just settling into one thing that Mahomes can really figure out. Because once he does that, he's a guy who will, you know, sit and, like, over the past couple of seasons when teams are starting to play too high, he'll sit and just pick you apart. He'll have one of the lowest A dots in the league if he needs to, and do that. But then if you're going to be aggressive and you have those downfield, he'll have those, you know, plays out of structure where he'll make something happen down the field. So if you can just kind of change up a lot of the looks, and I think, well, you know, a team like Baltimore, and we'll see what they bring from the McDonald defense into this year, because I think, you know, schemes like that will certainly help. And things like we saw from what Cincinnati is doing, those are the type of defenses that I think will, you know, help slow him down. But again, there's really no stopping him because he just, you know, figures out a right answer for everything eventually.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Pizzuta, 33rd team, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Going to join us on Thursdays all season long. We got a Friday football game to talk about this week, though, Dan. That we won't have many of those. Eagles, yeah, and Packers. And my simple question is, like, are you up or down on the Eagles? I'm gonna leave it open ended. Are you up or down on the Eagles?
I'm hesitant. I will say that I would really like to see how these, both sides of the ball, really play out for them, because you bring in two new coordinators, but neither one of them were relatively successful in where they were last year. I think there are going to be some, you know, more interesting things with Kellen Moore that we will see for this offense that will help him out. I'm just not sure what this defense is going to be from, you know, personnel-wise. They're just not as deep at pass rusher as, you know, they used to be over the past few years. Corner is going to be very highly volatile also. So they are just kind of a wait-and-see team for me also to see really how these two new philosophies on each side of the ball are really going to match for them this season.
So I'm a big, like, the vibes are just off. There's something wrong there with Sirianni and Hurts, and there just seems to be a disconnect. Like, they're stupid talented, and it might all work out. I just look at them as opposed to, like, the cohesion and everything that's going on in Green Bay, LaFleur's ability to just create a building where everybody seems to be able to succeed. Like, as you've done this over the course of your year, so much of what you've done, and obviously when you were with Sharp, like, super-duper numbers adjacent and looking into data, and, like, that is so valuable. How often do you take a step back in your analysis and just be like, I like vibes here? And not to go, like, full vibes guy, but, like, to go, like, okay, some of these numbers might not wind up adding up because there's something in the building that isn't working.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's, I feel like, I, you know, not to go full vibes, like you said, but, you know, it's always kind of marrying, you know, some of those numbers and the context of what brings it. And yeah, like you said, especially over the back half of last season, it's just this doesn't seem great. But then you kind of look at, if you are going to be a little more optimistic, you look at all of the things that went wrong for them. And, you know, Jalen Hurts was still a top 10 quarterback by, like, EPA per play, which is something that I think you can build on a little bit. So, but, like, because they have all that talent, you still do have some of these outs that have a much higher margin for error, right? When you're throwing to an A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and now you add a Saquon Barkley, you have Dallas Goedert, that is still a stacked offense. So you do have a much larger margin for error when, even if things aren't completely going right, because just by the talent alone, they should still be able to make plays. But yeah, like you said, I think there still is, there's a lot of work that kind of needs to be done for you to, like, really feel good about what these Eagles are going to be this year.
All right, Dan, before we let you go, are you up for a little sports radio fun here?
Sure.
Okay, so as I was putting together the graphic that we've been putting up on the YouTube stream while you're talking, I came across a profile that I'm like, that looks like a young Dan. Do I have it correct that you were a gymnast at the Temple University?
Yes, I was.
That is, one, incredible. Like, I have so much, as a fitness athletic person myself, I have so much respect for the what gymnasts can do. But my dumb sports radio question is, at your absolute peak, how many pull-ups could you do?
Probably a lot. I don't know if I ever, you know, fully maxed out on pull-ups.
Yeah.
But, you know, a usual, you know, type of workout probably would have been, as part of a workout, would have been at least, you know, three sets of, you know, 25. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, they're quite a bit. Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that I was doing, you know, was with body weight. So, you know, I wasn't, when I was working out in that fashion, it wasn't a lot of, you know, max benching or anything.
Yeah, of course.
It was a lot of body weight. So yeah, it was doing a lot of, you know, pull-ups and push-ups and things like that. So probably a higher number than maybe, like, I would have been able to do just in terms of, like, straight weightlifting.
Yeah. So Anthony, have you ever done 25 straight pull-ups in your life?
In high school.
In high school? Okay. I feel like when I was, like, 8, because you don't weigh anything when you're 8. And you're just like, you're a dumb elementary school kid, and you're doing the test, and you're like, I don't know, 1, 2, 3. Definitely cannot do 25. That is impressive. Dan, I will come up with more dumb questions in our interviews and hopefully smart ones at the beginning. This was great, and very much look forward to doing this all season long. Appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, fantastic. I appreciate you having me on.
That's Dan Pizzuto, everybody. He's with the 33rd team. They do a great job. They have all kinds of former execs and coaches, and also a great slew of writers, including Dan and his colleagues. I enjoyed that, Anthony. I'm excited to talk to Dan all season long. He's really smart.
No, he really is. And he has a lot of good energy.
Yeah, great energy. I was almost like, how we can save, like, what was the longest you ever did a handstand question for next week?
Oh, yeah. He got
could you,
beat
could
on
you
that
do
one.
A handstand, period?
I can do a handstand. Not okay. For a long time, though.
Should we put that on our punishment list? You have to try to do a handstand.
You've never attempted to do one?
I mean, yeah, I've attempted to do one. I'm saying, but, like, we should add dumb human tricks to our potential punishments for our competition Wednesday picks.
I think you do 10 handstand push-ups with your feet against the wall.
Ooh. That's just got to make sure we don't do it right after we eat.
Yeah.
That could be bad. Okay. That's enough of that. More smart football talking from people named Dan next for Not My Beat today. Ladies and gentlemen, in 5 minutes, Dan Orlovsky.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.